Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, May 2nd, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart, you know, you can express that to me if you feel that need. The email's there for you. It's not just for me to get spam mail and for people to just, you know, tell me to subscribe to their company or give them money. And I really don't understand what they're asking me for. So it'll be a good repository for something that you would want to ask me and maybe you want me to talk about. Or something like that. Yeah. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 165 of the podcast. And I'm sitting here in my apartment alone. Not saying that like it's a bad thing. I'm just alone in my apartment. It looks less and less like a fallout shelter because I've cleaned up a little bit. I'm in the process of spring cleaning, and there's things that I want to get done. There's things just stuff that just kind of stares at you in the face. And this has been a pretty good year so far, which means that I'm working all the doing my TPS reports by day, stand up by night, and then some of my weekends have been, you know, super busy. So that's a good thing. But it also means that I'm not at home a lot and I'm not doing what I need to be doing as a fully functional adult, which means that I need to clean my apartment. So I'm in the process of doing spring cleaning. And I cleaned a little bit, did some laundry over the weekend. I'm getting my shit together, you guys. Getting it together, and right now got ESPN on mute. Well, so what is it? NFL Live. They're talking about the draft, and I didn't know that what I'm seeing is it looks like that Tennessee's going to be pretty good, at least their offense is, because they got that kid Henry. Is it Derrick Henry? Whatever the kid that won the Heisman Trophy from Alabama with the dreads. So they're going to have him and DeMarco Murray, which should be good. I mean, that should be a good 1-2 punch, because you need two good running backs these days. You need that Marcus Allen, Bo Jackson, Tecmo Bowl 1-2 punch to have a productive offense. And Mariota's had a pretty good year. I said Mariota. Did I add the S? Or did I just say, I don't even know. But you know who I'm talking about. Their quarterback, Marcus Mariota, looks like he's going to be good. And so they'll be set. I don't know what his receivers are like. I couldn't tell you. This would be a good time to really set the show. It would be good if I had the setup where I could ask a guy like Michael Felder about that team and about what their draft means. It would be perfect, and I've said that I was going to do that. Like I said, getting my shit together, really trying to make things work, and it's a process. It's a process, but here we are. And then, you know, obviously the big hullabaloo regarding this year's draft was the Laramie Tunsil situation, the kid offensive lineman from Ole Miss. 15 minutes or minutes before the draft, his social media accounts got hacked, and one of them was a video of him smoking weed out of a gas mask in front of a Confederate flag. Laramie Tunsil is a black guy, and he's smoking weed in front of a Confederate flag. But that's, I mean, he's in Mississippi. I mean, so, I mean, that's something that would be around. Like, if you were in Maryland, my home state, there would be crabs around. You might see, I don't know. But it's something that's germane to that region of the country, basically. So the guy, kid smoking weed, and he drops in the draft. He should have been, probably should have been a number. If these quarterbacks, I mean, Goff and whoever the fuck, they made such a big thing, a big stink about these two guys. Laremy Tunsil was the kid that was supposed to be the big pick. And then so he went down to 13 to the Miami Dolphins. And so they said that that he was dropping because of that indiscretion. I mean, the stigma towards weed, marijuana has waned in within the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, it's legal to smoke in a lot of states now. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but people are making billions of dollars off of selling weed. And it's legal in Cali, so that's just an excuse. And people with more who have, I listen to Bomani Jones talk about it. I listen to Levitard, two of my favorite people in sports. And they, I mean, you can listen to them for that stuff with all the technical stuff. But it really is. And Bomani Jones spoke to it, just the fact that maybe you just hate the players. And I think it's hate. No, I think it's jealousy. You know, because these kids are making a lot of money. They're talented, and now they have the chance to actually make money off of their craft, which they weren't allowed to do in college. And so it is fucked up that this. I felt bad for him. The biggest day of this kid's life, this stuff comes out, and there's issues with the maybe blackmail, extortion. Issues with this kid's stepfather may have been one of the culprits of this thing. And so really just trying to fuck with this kid's money. And you have cases. I mean, this probably was one of the most egregious cases done to a player on draft day when they try to fuck up his money. You know, all these things with Dez Bryant, them a team asking if his mother was a prostitute. And just really just kind of fucking with these kids, poking and prodding them, is one of the reasons why I don't really care for college sports anymore like I used to. And I really don't know some of these kids until they come into the league. And I really didn't know who RG3 was until he won the Heisman. I was just like, oh, black quarterback, he won. And I was, you know, was pulling for him. But it's just not the same. I guess I'm a little too woke for this shit now, guys. So it's hard. It's becoming harder and harder for me to really separate the fact that so many people make a living, feed their kids, feed their families off of college sports, and the people actually playing these sports don't get to do that. And so what they tried to make an even bigger stink of was the fact that he was in his press conference and he admitted to getting money from the coaching staff at Ole Miss for paying his mother's water bill. And so there's text messages or something, either in Twitter, either Instagram, direct messages or something where it's implied. Well, he's asking for money and the coach is giving him money. And I was like, and he admitted that they did, that it did happen. And it seems like they're trying to sweep that under the rug. And all these NFL and ESPN pundits are saying, not all of them, but some of them are saying, oh, you know, he should have lied about that. Basically saying that the kid should have lied about that. And now we should feel bad about Ole Miss because Ole Miss might be under fire. And I know that I think Dan Levitard mentioned that Ole Miss was, I mean, Eli went there. What, 10, 15? I don't know. Eli was there about 10 years ago. I don't know how long Eli's been in the league, but he's been in the league for a good while. And they were just like an average SEC team. And then all of a sudden they got really good and they're winning and they get all these good players and nobody's saying anything about it. So now these guys are under investigation and good for them. And I mean, so it goes, you know, good for Laramie Tunsil for outing them, whether he wanted to or not. And they got his ass up quick. And that press conference after he admitted to getting money from him, it's like the lady was like, his publicist was like, he's got to go. I mean, he, you know, he's got to go. This is it. This is in the end of the conference. This is the end of it. All right. This is it. And they got him out of there. But then they was just going to let him sit and say, I'm sorry that, you know, y'all saw me smoke weed, even though it really ain't no crime no more. Man. So that annoyed me. And that became, I did a cast pod, Jeff Cerulli, Amanda Baramke, and Case. I don't know what Case's last name is. I'm going to find it. I don't want to be a dick and not give you his last name. Case Rosso. They have this thing, this show that they do on Facebook, and it's called a cast pod, where they talk to a comic, the three of them talk to another comic or whoever their guest is for about 15 minutes via Facebook Messenger, and you just kind of talk about an issue. That was the issue that they presented to me, and we talked about that, and it sort of just branched off into other things about how women are treated with regards to sports. There was this video. The only person I know of it would be like the notable person that I can think of was Sarah Spain of ESPN. She's a writer and she's becoming a personality. She has a radio show and everything. And they were doing the Jimmy Kimmel thing where guys would read mean tweets to these women that were said about these women. The guys that were reading them didn't write the mean things, but it was like, you know, I want to rape you, I hope you die, I fucking hate you, and all this hateful stuff, and how fucked up it is that these women have to go through this. And, you know, it branched off into that and other different things. And so it was pretty neat. I don't know when they'll release it, but whenever they do, I'll post the link. But I think this might have been one of the one of the more serious ones that they've done. It was like, I think they call it a very special cast pod, you know. So that's just really my take. And it's like, I don't care anymore. Like I'll wait till the season starts. You know, I'm excited just as anybody else, you know. The Seahawks got some kid that used to play with TCU that was pretty good. I think I retweeted. Oh, God. Well, I thought I did. You know how you think that you tweeted something? But I guess I didn't. All right. I don't know. But whoever was the quarterback of TCU, he's a hashtag black quarterback. And he got drafted. He's going to back up Russell Wilson. So that'll be good. And so I guess the big thing, one of the big things that happened over the weekend was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And I didn't watch the whole thing. I had forgotten the thing was on. And so I just watched it on YouTube. And I watched, how did I get? So yesterday I woke up, I got home pretty late because, you know, I just got home late because I'm pretty important. Not really. I was in traffic in the city. Then I got back at like 2. And so I woke up Sunday morning. I see on Facebook, Obama does a mic drop. He says Obama out in his speech. And he drops the mic and everybody has that gift now. And that was all over Facebook and Twitter. I was like, damn. All right. And then I look and Larry Wilmore did the speech. They usually have a comedian do the speech after the president, and the big thing was he called Barack a nigga, N-I-G-G-A, and he said you know, you did it, my nigga. And I was like, oh, shit. And that was on a loop. And I was just like, oh, my God, he actually called the president a nigga. Like, the term of endearment way, not like, nigger, get out of this store, or you can't eat at this lunch counter, or you can't vote. You know, not like that. He was not like how everybody used all these different ways to say it without saying it, like calling him a socialist. The homie J.L. Covan always talks about that. So I watched Larry Wilmore because it was only 20. It was about 23 minutes. And I noticed that during his set, he got a lot of groans because he kind of went after everybody, really. And he was getting, you know, a lot of people were saying it wasn't, some of that stuff wasn't really for the room. It was for, it was really for Black Twitter. It's almost like Larry Wilmore's speech was for Black Twitter because he roasted pretty much everybody. And then that ending was just like, damn. Okay, you did it, my nigga. And I was talking to my parents about it, and I watched it, and I was like, damn. I was thinking like, okay, this comedian, you know, did his thing or whatever. I was thinking about, would I have done that? And I don't think I would have done it, but I understand it, and I'm not like, I wasn't repulsed by it. I was just more shocked, like, he did it. And I guess I felt, it was kind of like the same way I felt about when I first saw the Chappelle show. When I saw, like, and I'm going to name drop you guys. I opened for Neil Brennan a few years back. And I was at the Arlington Draft House. We were sitting backstage. And I told him, like, look, I'm a fan of your work. Love the Chappelle show. And just, you know, because you don't want to, you want to be like, I was like, being honest, not blowing smoke up your ass. And he's like, no, I understand. And I was telling him, you know, when they did that Clayton Bigsby Black White Supremacist, it was just like, I can't believe they're fucking doing this on TV. I can't believe they let them do this on television. You know, that's kind of how I felt about this Larry Wilmore thing. Like, grant, it was funny and it was just like, wow, it was heartwarming. It was all these things. And I was like, wow, right? That's amazing that they did that. Amazing. You know, I'm trying to make that parallel between the Clayton Bigsby thing to this Wilmore thing. And I was talking, so I had watched, and I had watched Barack, and he, like, you know, he slayed. He killed. I don't know why they make you have to follow. Why do you have to follow the president? I guess the president's kind of, I mean, Wilmore, I guess they considered him to be the host, but the president, maybe he just gives his opening remarks. But I mean, damn. I mean, he was on. You know, that CPT time joke, jokes that white people shouldn't say. Talked about Ted Cruz calling the basketball hoop something an alien would say. And he's like, oh, and you say that I'm the alien. And he didn't really know what a basketball rim was, or he said it in a weird fucking way. You know, he just kind of went in on everybody and it was great. And, you know, I'm talking to my parents about it, and he was like, oh, you know, my parents are, dad is 75, mom is 72. And he was like, oh, I just don't think he should have said that, and da da da. And I told him, I was like, look, I probably wouldn't have did it, but I understand why he said it. It's a, they wanted to call Obama a nigger, and they made up all these things, all these words, and they blocked him. Some of his policies, he couldn't get things done that could help a lot of people. He wasn't perfect, and you know, but it seemed like he was the type of president that genuinely cared about people. And they blocked him, and they just made the road so hard for him. And that moment was just this supremely visceral moment that was like, you did it, my nigga. You did it. Like, it's that, that's just fucking amazing. And it wasn't that moment was for Black America. I mean, it really was. That was what that moment was, and it was just it was great. And I just explained it to my parents that, you know, it's a term of endearment. And I feel a sort of way when like somebody's like calls me a nigger, like that I respect, or somebody that I, you know, I was just like, it's something that made, yes, I am. Like it's that term of endearment that made me feel, it sort of makes you feel whole in a way. It kind of makes you feel real. And it's not for everybody. I know some Black people don't like it. It's kind of jarring when you hear it. But for the most part, it's just like that Q-Tip song, Suck a Nigga. It's just, you know, it that song still rings true today. That song is like, what, 20 plus years old? I don't know. It was a beautiful moment. And I tweeted this, but I don't think anybody gave a fuck. But I was like, Cam Newton lost the Super Bowl so we could have Beyonce's Lemonade and we can get, you know, the White House correspondence dinner. It's like really is like Black history season, you know. It's just and it's sad, man, because, you know, I started this series on Facebook called Y'all Gonna Miss Barack, man. Like the little video, like the video that he did about what it was going to be like when he left, like, you know, like it's going to be like you don't realize, like, you've been with this guy for 8 years and he's a charming guy. He's personable. He's got the decorum that you need to have to be a president, like this regality, but he's also down to earth. And that little video was neat. The first one that really made me realize it was the science fair video that he did, like his last science fair that they did at the White House. And that was like, damn, man, like it's going to really fucking suck when he leaves. And I don't think we'll ever get that again. I don't know. I mean, maybe not in our lifetime, not just a Black guy, but I'm sure we'll get maybe somebody with the personality, somebody that's, you know, sort of down to earth. But yeah, what a way to go out. What a powerful moment, you guys. I mean, it was amazing. It was great. It was really cool. So that was really swell. So ESPN on mute again. Amin El-Hassan, Rachel Nichols and Tracy McGrady are talking about, how worried are you about Steph Curry's absence? That's what's going on now. The way that they looked, the way that the Warriors looked yesterday, you know, it almost seems like they could wait until the Western Conference Finals and let Steph come back. I just hope he's okay. I'm just hoping. You guys know where I feel, but I really want the Cavs to win. I want him to complete this narrative of winning for Cleveland so they can just leave him alone, you know? And LeBron, they'll miss LeBron too. Like people, they're going to miss Kobe just stayed around too long. Kobe stayed around too long, and I felt like he held that team hostage and it couldn't get anything done. So we'll see what happens with the Luke Walton era. We'll see how that pans out if the young players will get to develop. But anyway, I hope Curry comes back. I will be watching the Cavs and the Hawks tonight. I'm not fully locked in on the NBA playoffs right now, to be honest with you. Like it's still kind of early, so we'll see. I don't know. I felt like I wanted the Hornets to win because I'm afraid of the Miami Heat. I think they match up well with the Cavs, and I'm just kind of nervous about that because Wade, they got Whiteside, they got Justice Williams, and I don't know. I'm just nervous, and I don't want that you know, I want the road to be easy for the Cavs. And I guess their competitors, they don't really care who they want, but we'll see, everybody. And then the way the Spurs just beat the shit out of the Thunder, I mean, my God. I was out on Saturday, and I looked at my phone, and the lead was so. You know what? I looked at Facebook, and one of my good friends from grad school and his wife was at the game, and like they took a selfie, like they weren't even paying attention to the game. They're just like, oh, the Spurs are beating the crap out of the Thunder, you know, because they're big Spurs fans. And I look at my phone, and they were just destroying them. It was pretty insane, you guys. So I don't know if Kevin Durant is coming back. Where is he gonna go? We'll find out in, I guess, July or and later on in the summer. But they don't really have anybody. They just have Westbrook and Durant. That's pretty much it. I don't know, you guys. So what's going on in my week? How was comedy for me last week? Comedy was pretty decent, I would say. You come off on you kind of have a high. I had a little, the build up for the Proctor show, because I was excited. Because when you're a young comic and you're starting to headline a little bit, and it's kind of, it happens every once in a while that you get to stretch out like that and do a big show of that. A show of that magnitude. And you prep for it, and then you kind of just come down from it. And so I had a show Tuesday night at the Standing Room, and that was fun. Like, the Standing Room is always fun. It's a room in it's a club in Long Island City, and it was cool. Like, it was just, I had a fun set. It was a good way to work out and all that jazz. And then Wednesday I had a show in Hoboken that was cool. But there was a dude that was heckling before. Like, the whole show was like cool for, and then I closed the show out. Then I got up there, and then some dude that wasn't there, like, I clocked him before I went on stage, came into the show late and was standing in the back of the room talking with his friends. And this place was in a bar. And the room that we were in the bar closed off. It was, you know, it had doors that would close, and the rest of the bar, it was free for you to talk and do whatever the fuck you wanted to do. And these dudes are talking backstage. I mean, the backstage, they're talking, and you know, and I get on stage and I'm starting my set. I said something about my day job, and the guy was like, "You have a job?" I was like, "Yeah." And I was just kind of shocked and angry, and I just looked at him. I was like, "What are you doing, man?" I think I told him to get the fuck out of here. I haven't even listened to the tape, but he left. Then I had to win the room back. You know, like, when you're a big black dude, you're already imposing. You're already looked upon as a threat, and you're just trying to make people laugh and tell your jokes and go home. You know, you're just trying to do that. And then like, I always call it like the substitute teacher mode. Like, you scold an audience member, and then you have to reset the room. And so I did that, and I had a fine set. It was okay. You know, I made him laugh, did my job. And you know, so it goes, man. And then Friday night I did comedian Amber Nelson. I've done shows with her before, but we had done the High Mud Comedy Festival in March up in the Berkshires, and she said, "Hey, just hit me up if you want to do my show." And I had to reschedule, and so I did it on Friday. And Bushwick is always like, it's weird because it's in Brooklyn, and it's definitely getting gentrified. But then it's like in a warehouse industrial area. So you'd have like, I don't know, like a lumber company nearby, and then some froofy, trendy, swanky restaurant. You know, it's just such a a weird juxtaposition of industry and then hipster-fied shit going on. So that's kind of like, but you feel like you could still get robbed or murdered. But then, like, you know, so that's just kind of how Bushwick Brook, if you've never been in that area, that's just sort of like how it feels. So I did it. The Cobra Club was like a bar. It's like a hipster bar, and they had this cool back room with a nice stage. I took a picture of it. It's on the Instagram, and Amber Nelson hosts, and she just hosts the fuck out of that show. Like, she's just such a really, like, a ball of energy and very lucid and very fun. And so, yeah, so she hosted, and I went on first, did my thing. It was fun. And so that room, you know, Friday nights live from outer space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So that was fun. And then I did a show, Comedy Outliers, hosted by friends of the podcast, Mike Brown and Brandon Collins. And they have it at this bar called Lily O'Brien's in the Wall Street area. And I did that show on Saturday. It was really fun. Had a good time. Did a spot. Like, it's one of those shows, like, you do your spot and you want to hang out after. I couldn't hang out because I had to go see a friend in a play that just happened to be, like, right around the corner. And I gotta say, I don't know, like, I think Google Maps is great, but because I've been using it, I've been using Google Maps lately when I'm driving somewhere that I don't know where I'm at, or just to, you know, get directions and stuff. But when I'm walking, when I'm on foot, it just seems like it's hard. Or maybe my sense of direction sucks. But I almost thought I was going to be late to the play because I was trying to figure out where the fuck I was going, and it just kept rerouting me. And I felt like, oh, am I near the place now? It keeps like, I don't know. Like, I just got really frustrated. And I think it's maybe more of a user error than actual Google Maps. Like, because, you know, Google knows everything about you, no matter what. You know how it says, oh, will you let Google know what your info is so you can get onto this app? And you're like, no, but it knows anyway. Like, Google knows everything. There's no hiding from it. If you have an Android phone, if you have a cell phone, they just know about your life. They know everything. Like, I ordered some t-shirts. Like, it was just kind of like an impulse buy. I ordered this shirt. It's a really cool shirt, actually. It was a Voltron t-shirt, but if Voltron was a Nintendo video game. And ever since I ordered that shirt, I just keep getting these pop-ups on Facebook. It's like, oh, you like this shirt? Now you like this little cool vintage-y t-shirt? Do you like this? Do you like this? Only thing about that Voltron shirt, I bought a 5X because I thought it was going to be made small, but it's like way too fucking big. So, I mean, I would rather, you know, I don't want it to be tight. So, and I'm losing a little, losing some LBs. So that's good, but that shirt's way too fucking big. So I'm tempted to buy in a smaller size. But then I bought a shirt, this really cool shirt with BB-8 from Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And you could see inside of the wheel, and it's Mickey Mouse running like it's a treadmill, like it's a hamster wheel. So that was pretty cool. So, you know, but they keep sending you these things. I don't know if I'm, and that's, I guess that'll lead me into, okay, so I'll come back to that. So yeah, Google just knows everything about you, and there's no getting around it. Like, when you buy a movie ticket, it automatically comes up on your Google calendar. Like, you got this ticket to this thing. And in a way, I guess that's pretty good. I guess you just don't murder anybody, but Google will know it. I don't plan on murdering anybody, but, you know, it just, I don't know, just doing crimes. I shouldn't have went there. So I went to see one of my friends in a show, And she's working on it. She's getting her MFA. It was the Actors Studio Drama School at Pace University, the MFA repertory season. So I went to see her. It was 3 one-act plays. She was in the last one. And so you get to see these grad students do, some of them are doing their thesis play. Some of them are, you know, are just working. And it was pretty cool. It was cool. I always love going to see theater, no matter what kind it is, just to be, get cultured and just to see live theater. Because, it you know, just doing stand-up, like immersing myself in the world of stand-up comedy for the past 7 years, it's been kind of forget. So that's why I always like to see, live music, always like to see some acting, and I'm trying to do, hopefully I can do more of it. I mean, I'd love to be doing that shit, but love to see some. I was so spoiled when I was living in Chicago, because all of my friends were doing plays around the city. So I would get comped or get like discount tickets, but mainly I would just get comped all the time and get to see this like great fucking work. But so this was at the Gibney Dance Studio and also in the Wall Street area. And it was pretty cool. It was good to see people doing their thing, man. Young actors, I guess some, I think they're all adults. They're all adults. Yeah, by now. And anyway, it's just fucking cool to see that. And I was glad that I got to go. And my friend, you know, she did her thing, and that was good. Yeah, and then I just went home. And that was pretty much my week, you guys. So I'm going back to, I want to go back to this. I kind of feel like I'm 36 and I'm feeling like I'm regressing in a lot of ways. I feel like I'm regressing. Like, I bought these two t-shirts. I bought that Voltron shirt. And I'm like, am I the guy that does that, that wears those shirts? You know, like the Voltron shirt. It looked pretty cool, the BB-8 shirt. I just always feel like I'm a fat guy. You don't want to be wearing shirts like that. I don't know. Maybe it's just a self-esteem issue. Maybe there's a lot of bullshit that I know that I have within myself. So maybe the fat guy thing isn't the real reason. It's just like, I just think the shirt is cool. Maybe I'll start wearing more of them. But then am I sort of like trying to become a kid again, trying to stay young? I don't know. But if I think a shirt is cool, it's just cool, you know? But I think when I continue to lose weight, you know, those shirts would look good on me. Like, you could get away with some of those nerdy t-shirts and stuff like that, you know? I don't know. But one thing I know that I've done within the past 6 months is I'm into action figures again. And I think I've always been into action figures, but this Star Wars thing, it's awakened something inside of me, or it's reawakened. And when I was a kid, I loved action figures. I loved figurines. I loved like the porcelain ones, like the like little statues. I have to ask my mom about that. So I had tons of action figures when I was a kid, and like I bought. So I have the Finn action figure from Star Wars. I have a Rey diecast. I have a Kylo Ren. I have a 3-inch Stormtrooper Finn. I have the Stormtrooper Finn that's like the Star Wars Black Series, and it's like I've been getting these. It's only like 5 or 6 now that I have. So let's see. I got that tall, maybe the 12-inch Finn. That was like $10. I got Rey. I got a Finn, regular Finn, Stormtrooper Finn, Kylo Ren, and a little 3.75 Stormtrooper. So that's 6 action figures in 6 months. So that's not bad. So now this Black Panther, the Captain America Civil War is coming out this week. And I'm pretty amped for that movie, mainly because I loved Winter Soldier. That to me, I would say that's got to be in my top five superhero movies. How do I want to do it? You know what? Top five Marvel, because then this podcast would be 4 hours long if you have me trying to mention all of them. But I would say The Avengers was good. I liked Guardians of the Galaxy. That was entertaining. I love Civil War. I mean, I loved Winter Soldier. I don't know, you guys. I'm trying to think of. But anyway, I loved. It was just it made me feel the same way that I felt about Hunger Games, how I felt like those movies were socially relevant, just about, you know, government and fucking taking over, man, like stuff like that, you know, spying, Edward Snowden shit type stuff. And it was just well done. It was just a well done movie. And so I'm excited about this. Now, I don't know what I'm going to do. When I'm going to see it. Like, do I want to wait till after work to go see it? Do I want to see it on, like, wait to go after work on Friday, or go after work on Thursday and see it with all the nerds? But maybe if I go see it on Thursday, it won't be as turned up. I do have $10 on my AMC Stubbs card. So it's like, could I do that and then pay? And then do like the Prime thing where it's like the ticket's $20, but I would only be paying about 10, and you get all this sound and crazy shit going on, you know? And like, that's like right around the corner from my apartment, from my house. I don't know. So I'm just kind of, I don't know, you guys, I don't know what I want to do. So I'm really excited about it, but now, you know, getting into this Star Wars, I feel like this Star Wars thing is becoming a gateway drug, because now, like, there's the Black Panther action figure. And let me tell you about this. Like, the Black Panther action figure, it's really cool because it has two different heads. So it has the regular, like, his mask, and then it has the black face with T'Challa. I don't know how you pronounce the guy's name. Forgive me, nerds, that I'm not saying the guy's name right. But it's like the the Chadwick Boseman. I was like, oh, cool. Like, you got the actor's face that's in it. That's really fucking dope. I want that action figure. And you try to find it. You go on eBay. They're selling it like $200, $160, $65. The action figure is really worth about $20. $24 at the most. And they're just, I'm like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. I want one of these. But every time you go into the store, you can't find them. Like, I couldn't find the Finn. I couldn't find FN2187. I couldn't find that guy. So I ordered it from eBay, paid like under 30, about $30 for it, you know, with the shipping and handling. I'm like, all right. You know, it was my birthday season. You know, I had made a little money. And I was like, okay, I'll treat myself to this toy. So the homie Greg Stone, who's an action figure aficionado, he was on the show, November of last year. And we're talking, and I'm asking him about it. I'm texting him back and forth. And, you know, we're talking about this stuff. And he's like, look, don't worry. It's going to go down. So about 2 weeks ago, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm up. I see this text message from Greg. He's like, he sends me a link, and I click on the link. It's the Black Panther action figure from Hasbro Toys, from Hasbro, like the main company that makes it. I'm like, oh shit. I tried to order two, wouldn't let me order two, tried to order one. And I went and I got through to checkout. This item is no longer available. So I was so close to getting this action figure, but so far away because it just sold out immediately. So he was like, don't worry about it. You know, it'll turn up. It's, you know, it is what it is. Look on eBay, look around. Everybody's selling it for like 150 or 60, 70 bucks. They're selling it out of the package for 50 bucks. It's like, you fucking open the thing and you're still going to sell me this action figure for 60 bucks? It's ridiculous. You know what? Let me just go on eBay right now and see how much it is. And just looking, I'm like, oh my God, like now that just makes me want it more. Now I'm becoming the 8-year-old again that has to have this fucking thing. And he's like, just wait, just wait. He's like, just wait, just be patient. And I'm looking now, so I'm trying to find so right now, brand new Marvel Legends Captain America Civil War Black Panther action figure, $140.34. Buy it now, free shipping. Of course it's free shipping, you fucking asshole. It's ridiculous, man. Because they know people want it. And it's kind of cool because, like, if I wanted to pay that much, I would buy the super legit. It's this company called Hot Toys. And they make damn near a replica model. I don't know how big this, but they're selling it for like $239. How big is this thing? It looks like the fucking cartoon. How tall is it? 12 inches. And it's like the super legit. If you Googled Hot Toys, Captain America, Civil War, Black Panther, you would see how fucking amazing this looks. I think this would be the hobby if I had money. I would get into sneakers and action figures. But this shit is insane. So if I were to really spend that much money, I would put an ad, $80, I would buy one of these things, but not something you can buy, not a toy that you can buy at, if you're lucky, Walgreens or Kohl's or Walmart or fucking Toys R Us. Not something you could just pay $20, you know, $25. I could see that, but nah, man, like that's fucking ridiculous. Okay, so last week I'm getting up and I get another text from Greg, and it's the same thing. Like, they're back in stock. 2 weeks later, they're back in stock. So I try to order two. They wouldn't let me order two. So I went to order one, and I get to the checkout. And as soon as I hit to try to check it out, nothing. Like, it's sold out now. Sold out again. I'm like, fuck, what the fuck are you guys doing, man? You guys don't want me to have this thing. So I'm going, now that I'm doing this, I'm going back to it. And what are they saying? Now it's a notify when available. It's doing the same thing. So I was like, you know, I'm texting them, couldn't get it. They wouldn't let me get it. It's bullshit. And he was like, man, don't worry. It's just fucking weird, but it'll come out. Don't worry about it. So then he happens to text me again. And he's like, oh, I just saw that it's like $24 on Amazon. I went to Amazon. It was $24. Bought it. Got it. It's coming to me probably this weekend. So I'm good. I'm in. I got the fucking action figure. But it shouldn't be that hard. I don't know. Should it be that hard? This is another world that's weird for me. And he added me to his group, his Facebook. It's like a closed Facebook group about all this whole underground syndicate of people who are into these action figures, and it's a whole new world. Ooh, that was bad. That was really bad. That was way worse. Like, I gave you guys the goods with that Prince tribute, with my just like me reminiscing about Prince songs and how he had an influence on the artists that I enjoy. That was really top-notch work, if I must say so myself. Should have gotten more love than it did, but, you know, whatever. You can't, you know, maybe somebody will dig these things up and they'll excavate this podcast from the internet, and they'll say, wow, that guy was really talented. why was he working in a cubicle for so long before someone noticed it? But yeah, so that was bad. So I'm sorry that I didn't give you my that good. A whole new world. All right, there we go. So I got it. It'll be coming in the mail. And a reasonable price, $20-$25. You know, but that's a new addiction now. And that's, I don't know. I don't know. If you think I'm regressing, let me know. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that, guys. But I it does bring me some joy. And it's cool, maybe because it's a black character. And, that, you know, I'm excited to see Black Panther. That's the main thing that I'm excited about. And they had they have the Ta-Nehisi Coates written Black Panther. I subscribed to the comic book to get it digitally. So I'm excited about that. I haven't read the first one yet, but it's making me really excited. So I don't know what I'm going to do about it on this weekend. Like, am I going to do it on Thursday or what? I have to figure it out. Cause it's just like, I don't want to stand in line for the fucking thing. You know, it's just like Keenan and I were talking about a couple weeks ago. Just, you know, you go see the movie, you just go. It's just chill. It's not like Port Chester is cool like that in a lot of ways. I think I've never done a premiere, but I think I might do it. Maybe I'll do it Thursday, and then Friday I can just, you know, do, you know, after work, just do what I need to do, or maybe not sit in traffic. I don't know. I'm like figuring it out as I'm doing like thinking it out loud. I should do that once I turn the podcast off. But I've been looking on AMC to see where it's playing and what time and all that jazz. So I'm excited about this movie, mainly because Civil War was great. Maybe because Winter Soldier was great. And now that I'm excited about this movie, and I'm excited to see Black Panther. So that's just getting me more and more excited. So since we're talking movies, I've been talking movies a little bit. You know what? I don't know if I'm regressing or not. I think it's just, it would be a cool hobby. It would be a neat hobby to get, but I don't know. Whatever. Okay. Now, movies. Oh, let me talk about, yeah, we could do, let's do music first. Let's do music first. I listened to Drake's new album, Views, and I liked it. It passes the car test. I was listening to it in the car on Friday. I was like, okay, it sounds like a Drake album. It doesn't sound any, I don't think he's doing anything really new. It's just another edition of Drake, and Drake does Drake well. You know, I think it's fun. And I said this on Twitter, you guys. I think Views is what ninth grade me would have written if I had the penchant for songwriting. If I had the, you know, if I could, because he referenced Jodeci a lot in his, not a lot, but he referenced Jodeci in his hook, like Cry For You Like Jodeci. I'm like, what is this, 1992? You know? So you could tell that he's heavily influenced by like R&B and Fonte. Like, I think a lot of these rappers are pretty much you guys know where I stand on Fonte. Like, he's a great artist, great guy, but well, some of these guys are that's what they're doing. And it's not like they're stealing his shit, but I think Fonte really mastered just a guy that can rap his ass off. And then at the same time, just a very gifted singer as well. So Drake, it's good. I don't know how much I'll listen to it. Cause again, like he's, you know, just talking about Beyonce, last week, and that music's not really geared towards me. And I like to know what people are saying to just really to keep it young. And that's not even a knock to the music. It's just like, oh, this isn't geared towards me, but it sounds good. And I get it. It's like a summer blockbuster. It's like, what was that movie that came? Jurassic World. Oh, this is a big movie. Oh, I was entertained. That was entertaining. That sounds good. When you go see a big movie and it's like, oh, okay, that was fun. You know, that was, I had a good time. That's how I feel about Drake. And he's a talented dude. I watched the, was it anything else I wanted to say? I like that. I like the Rihanna song. I know she sounded really good on the record. Drake mentioned, he shouted out Glenn Lewis, one of my favorite R&B singers of this side of the new millennium. We could have had Glenn Lewis on a song. That would have been good. I think that's all I wanted to say. And then he said something about immature like Marcus Houston. Took a shot at Marcus Houston, who was basically the Drake of his time. If you really think about it, I mean, I think just Drake just kind of took the baton, took it to another level. Just being a child star, child actor that just really took his shit to, you know, to the heights, to the top of the rap game. I think that's all I want to say about Drake. So as far as Beyonce is concerned, I watched the Lemonade visual album, and I got to say, Beyonce is the undisputed baddest MILF in show business. She's a shit, and you just have to deal with it. Again, like I said a second ago, music's not really geared towards me, but it's good. It's fun. I was having this conversation with the comic. You know, we were talking about somebody she was saying, "Oh, Beyonce, I don't know. Like, she's not." I never felt like Beyonce couldn't sing. Like, now people are kind of knocking her on her voice, and I think vocally she's always been fine. Like, I remember listening to Destiny's Child in high school, like 97, 98. And just like, oh, these girls can sing. These girls are good. The last album that I think The Writing's on the Wall was their second album. And that was the one that was really dope. I remember in my youth, I was working. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you guys before. I was in this acting troupe called the Teen Performance Ensemble of Harmony Hall Regional Center. And it was it was in Fort Washington, Maryland. We were based in Fort Washington, Maryland. And we did, it was basically a kid's show that the first year we kind of wrote the scenes ourselves, and the director transcribed them, and we, you know, gave it form, and we sung and we danced. And I did another version where we did like fables, and we toured it all around summer day camps within the Maryland National Park and Planning Commission, within like the Southern Maryland region. So we rehearsed the play, and then we put it on the road. We get like a trailer. We had like a trailer, and we'd be in a van. And around that time, my second time doing it, Destiny's Child was hot. And this was when Bills was out. And Bills was on Writing's on the Wall. And that was we would play that album, we play those songs and stuff. So that was cool. That reminds me of my youth, and we would be doing those plays and shit. It was a lot of fun. It's been in the show business for a while, you guys. Just a long time. Long, long, long time. Something's gotta happen. Something's gotta work. So that was fun. And I just remember, like, they were good. Beyonce's good. She's super talented. And then it just got to a point for me where, like, I remember listening in 2003 when Dangerously in Love came out, that song Upgrade You was like, I was like, okay. And they were just, Jay-Z and Beyonce were just going back and forth, naming all these designer brands of things that I had never heard of. And I just kind of tapped out. It was just like, okay, you're hot, Beyonce. Jay-Z, you can rap. You guys are great. This shit isn't for me. Like, they're talking about Hermes briefcases or some shit. and I'm walking around taking the bus in Chicago doing some play in the projects. So just like, whatever. I'm just going to listen to indie hip hop now. But that's not a knock against them. That's just kind of where I just sort of fell off. And I always liked her and never really had any issue with her. But that's kind of like, so what is that? Like 12 years that I haven't really been, you know, and I bought the album. What was it? 4? I don't even remember. Anyway, just haven't been the hugest Beyonce fan. I'm not like, I like her. I shouldn't even have to tell you, you know, she's talented. I like her. Don't never had a problem with her. Watching this video, this special, this movie, this cinematic experience, it was dope. It was beautiful. Tons of beautiful black women in there. Visually stunning. The music was good. And, you know, when people try to say there's a knock on her singing, I think the singing's there. I think she's just doing something stylistically that where you're not really, you're kind of singing, but you're not. You're just kind of like, it's almost like she was rapping to a certain degree, but the skills are definitely there. It was visually stunning, and really cool. I get it, man. Like, I would pay to see her. You know, like, part of me is like, would I go see, like, in, like, you guys know, if you've listened to the show for a long time, in the 3 years that I've been doing it, you know, like, I like Selena Gomez, but I would feel like it would be a crime to not see Selena Gomez before Beyonce, because Beyonce, like, I know she's gonna give me a show. I don't know. I shouldn't even compare her to Selena. That's not fair. That's not fair to my future fiance, Selena Gomez. You know what I'm saying? That ain't really fair. You know, I would pay to go see the Formation tour. It got me. I got a little siced. I was trying to think of the line that was, the opening chords of Formation that's just been in my head for the last day and a half, you know? So I finally got to watch that. That's my take on it. I think it's dope. I think it's uber black and it's really cool, man. I like what she's doing, man. So she's Beyonce. She's at the top of the game. So I saw some movies. I went to go see Miles Ahead on Tuesday before I went down to Long Island City. And then this is the Don Cheadle, Miles Davis, his opus on Miles Davis. I liked it. It sort of seemed like it's a little all over the place, though. It's a good movie. The acting's good. And then I noticed, like, I liked how it wasn't just your standard issue, your standard issue biopic. Like, you grow up in a certain way. This guy's poor, and he becomes famous, and it's this and that. It's a little like, it was almost like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind meets Being John Malkovich in a way. Kind of like oddball-y, but grounded in this great actor, Miles Davis, great actor Don Cheadle, who essentially did, I would say became Miles Davis in this period where he was in the 70s, and he'd apparently taken a hiatus from playing, and he's trying to recover a session tape that got stolen from his house. And I just didn't like the fact that, you know, I was talking to Randolph Terrence of the Three Guys on podcast, and we were just saying like how they had to create that white character. The Ewan McGregor character was created in order to suffice the financier, like the foreign financiers of the project, and like that was kind of fucked up. Overall, it's a good movie. just kind of scattered. It's a good performance. Is it? I don't know if it's too early for him to get a nom. I mean, this is March, April, May. That's kind of tough. But I mean, around this time of year, Ex Machina came out, and that was considered, you know, not for any acting, which it should have been, but some technical awards got nominated. So I wouldn't be surprised if I saw Don Cheadle get nominated. You know, it just wasn't what I expected, but a solid movie nonetheless. You know, yeah, I really don't know what I was expecting. I don't know and at the same time, I was going through some shit on Tuesday afternoon. Something was festering inside of me with some other stuff, like with business stuff. So it really wasn't the movie's fault. I wouldn't say that I wasn't locked into the movie, but I did have some other shit going on. So if I do see it again, I'll probably appreciate it even more. But I did like the way that structurally he handled the different flashbacks, and it did have that Eternal Sunshine vibe to it to a certain degree. So for that, I would say it's worth seeing, because I think that was a dope ass movie. So Miles Ahead, B+, above, definitely above average. A-, B+. So Friday I had the show at the Cobra Club, and I wanted to see this movie called Green Room. And I don't know how much I really want to tell you about this movie. I want to kind of peep. I'll say, okay, so with this movie, I was excited to see this one, because this was an A24 release. And being the indie movie nerd that I am, I get excited when there's an A24 movie coming out that piques my interest. And so this Green Room was one of them. It's essentially about this band from Arlington, Virginia, which was pretty neat. That was a nice touch. They're a punk rock band, and they go on tour in the Pacific Northwest, and they end up doing a gig in a remote Oregon roadhouse. And that's all I'm going to say about it. I really don't want to give you too much of really don't want to explain too much about it, because I don't want to just to preserve your viewing experience. But I'll say, see this movie. I would give it an A. To me, it's the most entertaining movie I've seen this year. And I'm just trying to think in my look back into my mental Rolodex and just say, yeah, that's pretty much it. It was just the one that I had a visceral reaction to. It was on the edge of my seat, and was just kind of like, had like literally really just like vocalized my reaction to this movie. Like, it was just like, oh shit, oh god, oh no, you know. So I went to see this movie at Nighthawk Cinema, which is in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and I reserved my ticket because I knew it was going to sell out. And so I reserved my ticket and had, so that was like $12, and then I paid 18, I paid like 24 with the tip. I got three tiny ass steak tacos and a ginger ale. And the only thing I will say about this movie, it's gory. That's all I'm going to say. And I will also say, I said, that's all I'm going to say. Then I said, I'll also say, so I just took a little picture. Like, I tweeted like it to A24's Twitter handle and the Green Room Twitter handle, and just said, hanging out at Nighthawk Cinema, going to watch Green Room. And I took a little picture of the tacos and the soda. And then Tim, the homie Tim from Twitter, just a buddy from Twitter, was like, you better make sure you eat that before the movie. And I was like, oh shit. and so like, so I did. I mean, I was there like a half an hour before the fucking thing started, and I ate the little, you know, things or whatever. But it's a good movie. I really enjoyed it. I would say it's the best movie you can see in the theater right now. The more bang for your buck, until probably, you know, Civil War comes out in 3 days. So I really enjoy. I don't know if that's somebody in the hallway, what they're doing. What kind of sandwiches are these? Bourbon and bacon sandwiches from Arby's, I think. Is Arby's any good? The sandwiches look pretty good. I know a lot of people shit on Arby's, but those sandwiches look pretty good. Sorry, guys. So yeah, Green Room was good. And, you know, I tweeted about it. I said, yeah, I think I just tweeted, you know, that it was really good. And then one of my buddies texted me and was like, is it really that good? I was like, yeah, man, go see it. And then I texted him the next day. I was like, what did you think? Did you see it? He was like, yeah, I was with it. And so I'm telling you guys, you know, people like this movie. It's Andrew Short recommended, friend of the podcast. So he recommended it too. So Green Room, saw that, enjoyed it. Last night I was watching this movie called Echo Park on Netflix, and it's the subject matter, it just says two people cross cultural and economic boundaries to be together. That's basically it. And Echo Park's a neighborhood in LA. Stars Mamie Gummer, Tony Okungboa. Mamie Gummer is the main actor that you would probably know. Meryl Streep's daughter. I actually met her once after a show. She was really sweet and nice. And I like this movie. I texted my best friend about this, and I said, dude, I think I found the new medicine for melancholy, but you're not going to like it because it's an interracial couple. And then he texted me back and he said, yeah, probably. I already hate it. he's my best friend's black, and he's really pro-black. You need you need a pro-black friend. If you're a black person, you need more than one, but you need that one that kind of, oh yeah, I should think about that more. Or yeah, I'm not really you, because you just think I feel like I'm pro-black, but I am pro. No, what am I saying? I'm not like, what the fuck does that, you know, like an intensely like super black friend that's just supremely woke. Like he and I will have these really intensely good conversations about stuff. This is another thing. So, all right. Echo Park. I liked it. It's a good chill. It's one of those movies I put in that category where it's like, if you just want, you know, you want to see something cool, something that's visually stunning. The music's fucking good. The music is really fucking good in this. I discovered this guy. What's this kid's name? I call him a kid. I feel like I'm older than everybody. His name is Dorsch. And he's from, I don't know where he's from, but I got to get this guy's album. It's D-O-R-S-H. And he's got this song. He actually has two songs that are featured in the movie. The song that I don't want to play the song that got me is a song called Seduction, and the thing's 4 years old. So I'm gonna buy this album, and I'll let you know how I feel about it. But it's the album. It's called Neapolitan, and it's just really fucking smooth and it's really dope. So I just found myself rewinding and shazamming, and I was like, Jesus, this guy's good. Like the music's overtaking the movie, and this movie's just, it looks really good. It's shot well. It's just like sort of one of those slice of life type things. It's where nothing happens, but something does happen, but it's really nothing to a certain degree. That's not the best way to describe it. It's people trying to make a relationship work, and people trying to figure shit out. It's people bringing their own bag, their baggage into this situation. And you see what happens. In Medicine for Melancholy, one of my favorite movies of the last, 10 years. That's kind of dark, though. It's along the lines of that movie, but the music's good, and I really liked it. And it's just one of those chill movies where nothing really earth-shattering happens, but it's just one of those, like, thoughtful, interesting movies that's really good to look at, you know? So I recommend Echo Park. But the thing about being woke, like... You know, there was this Vulture article that came out, and I was listening to the. I had read the. Let me see if I can find it here for you guys, because I think I posted it, and then I think I got tagged in it too, just about how some of the really good black actors they're doing voiceover work for cartoons and like Disney movies, like Idris Elba. Is in, I think he's in Zootopia, and he's in The Jungle Book, and then this summer he's going to be in the new Star Trek movie, but he's going to be like an alien, so you can't see his face. And Lupita Nyong'o, I think Idris is in Finding Dory also, but I think some of that is true, where like Lupita, she just did that Liam Neeson Airplane movie, and then she was like Maz Kanata in Star Wars, and then they talked about Zoe Saldana. I mean, I still kind of want to see that Nina Simone movie just because it everybody says it's a shit show. But let me try to find this for you. Oh man, because Rod had tagged me in it. Damn it. I hate when I try to, you know, I didn't think I was going to be talking. Like, okay, so this is. Yes. So it's. I don't think this is the one, but this was called Comparing the Post Force Awakens Projects of Daisy Ridley and John Boyega. And it was at one point, everybody thought that. Daisy Ridley was going to be up for Tomb Raider, but they gave it to Alicia Vikander. And I could see her doing that too, but I mean, I kind of, she seems, Daisy Ridley is like super spot on to be a young Lara Croft. It's almost like she was low key Lara Croft in, The Force Awakens. If you really think about it, Kyle Buchanan wrote, an essay for Vulture called Why Won't Hollywood Let Us See Our Best Black Actors? And it was good, and they made some really good, some interesting points, but I'm looking at Idris Elba in this costume. You can't even tell that it's Idris under there, but I think it's just a role because it's just a role and they wanted to work. I mean, you know, granted, yeah, you know, hashtag black actors all day, but I just think that just happens to be the succession of roles. Should you be seeing more of them? Of course. Like, he's a good looking guy. Lupita's a good looking guy. Like, everybody talked about how beautiful Lupita was and is during Oscar season. And now, like, she's just, you know, she's just not, you don't see her anymore. She's like this orange alien with bad eyesight in Star Wars. Zoe, you see more of her. I mean, she's green, but you can still tell that's Zoe. I mean, a lot of people dragged her for that Nina Simone thing, but I don't know, like being woke, nigga, I was woke since like 11, 12 years old. So it's just for me, like, you know, I will post this stuff on Facebook if you follow me and stuff, and I'm black quarterbacks all day, but I, for everybody else, I would just say welcome to the party. Welcome to being aware of this shit. Like, for somebody that's loved theater and acting for as long as I have been and have participated in it to whatever level you could judge me on, whether or not I'm the credits I have, but I've been doing this for a long time, and I know what I'm talking about. You know, I will say that I know what I'm talking about, and just being doing colorblind casting and being, you know, playing these different roles and that aren't meant for a black actor to play, like being a black Stanley Kowalski doing educational theater in Northeast America, and people judging you. Like, there is this college thing that I didn't know about until I got to school, but there's this thing called the Irene Ryan competition, and you have these different schools all across the country participate. And if you do well, if you get to the finals, you go to the Kennedy Center and you perform, blah, blah, blah. So my first year, I was doing this play called The Misanthrope. It's a play written by Molière, and it was a French playwright, and it was transcribed. It was translated by this guy named Richard Wilbur, who was really great at translating and putting it in verse, and it was really dope. And I did the show, and I got nominated for this Irene Ryan competition. And I didn't know what it was about. And you get a theater person who adjudicates your show, who, like, they judge your show, and you pass on to a regional event, and you had do a scene with a person, and then you did a monologue. This is when I really didn't know about the game, you know. And I went up there and did my thing. I didn't get passed on or whatever, but it was cool. I got to go on a trip to, where was that? Like Juniata College in I think it's near Altoona, Pennsylvania. Anyway, so, and then the people were kind of, the judge was kind of a dick, and I did a monologue that was probably too old for me, but that's when I didn't know anything. So I kind of went in up there blind, and I did this, I did a monologue from The Miser, and The Miser is this old ass dude, which is also a Molière play, an old curmudgeonly guy that thinks everybody's trying to steal his money. And I did that monologue, and then I did a scene with another actress or whatever. And the guy was like kind of being condescending, like, hey, when I did the role, and like, nigga, it ain't about you. It's about what the fuck I'm doing right now, but whatever. And so I was like, oh, maybe next year I'll do better. So, and that's when I think that was around the time when I discovered August Wilson, and I was starting to understand, you know, coming to my own as a young actor or whatever. Maybe my junior year I got into August Wilson. I'm not 100% sure. But so now I was like, okay, maybe next year, you know, I'll give him another shot. Now I know what it's like. We do Streetcar Named Desire. I was shocked that I got the lead as Stanley Kowalski because I was black, one thing, and two, because I didn't think I was like that, a mean guy, like an asshole type. I thought if I got cast in the show, I was going to be Mitch, who was like the sweet, endearing, nice guy or whatever. So we get there, and I don't get nominated to go to the festival, the regional competition. But the two women that played Stella. And the woman that played Stella, my wife, and the woman that played Blanche, they got nominated. But who the fuck was they acting with that helped get them there? Me. You know, I'm not bitter about the shit, but that's, you know, I was like, I see what he's doing. And it's like, like a black Stanley, blah, 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 yada, yada. I was disappointed that I didn't get to go, but I was like, whatever, who gives a shit? But yeah, that's one situation where it's like being a hashtag black actor and getting disappointed when you know you did your thing and you know, you don't get recognized for it, but you know, it was what it was. But yeah, man, just the racial stuff, and like somebody posted a picture of an Old Navy ad with a black woman, a white man, and a black kid. and people were upset about the ad. So I'll never shop at Old Navy again. Like, who gives it? Who really does shop at Old Navy? I mean, I bought a hat from Old Navy because I needed a hat, and it was like 90. I bought it for like 99 cents on clearance. I mean, if you shop at Old Navy, you shop at Old Navy. But if you do, you don't. Who gives a shit? But people were they were so pissed about that. They were like, I'll never shop at Old Navy. Blah, 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 rah, 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 rah. And then people were posting. And I just said, I looked at the picture and I was like, oh, that kid's like fully black. So he must be from a previous relationship. And the white guy is a cool dude because he's taking care of that kid, you know. It wasn't like that Cheerios commercial where the girl, you could clearly tell the girl was biracial and the dad was black and the mom was white and all that stuff. And then there's the gay Campbell's soup commercial where they were like, I am your father. And it was the two gay dads. I don't know, man. I just always had my third eye open when it came to race. So it's just like with everybody being woke now, like, you know, all right, welcome to the party. But it's and then I don't know how I feel, like, kind of being like am I like a grizzled veteran of being woke, where I, like, it's not that I don't care, it's just that I'm not surprised by some of this bullshit. And somebody that's loved the show business, that's loved acting and everything like that, you know, it's just a different thing, you know. It's just like, I don't know if it's a different thing. It's just like, well, this has been going on for a long time. And I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to say like, oh, well, you can't do anything about it. No, that's not true. But I guess maybe now I'm just glad that everybody's more aware of it. And I guess now with social media, people can state their opinion. But this isn't anything new. This isn't my first rodeo. And just because, you know, it's not a surprise. Like, you don't see these. And then this guy was on this really good podcast that I like about entertainment and the arts called The Frame. It's under 30 minutes. It's a podcast that's under 30 minutes. And it's a daily podcast. I think it's a Monday through Friday thing. And they talk about what's going on. And this guy, I believe it was Kyle Buchanan who was on. And he was just talking about, you know, you have a movie like The Fast and the Furious, Fast 7, that's this movie that just breaks box office numbers, and it has a multi-diverse, multi-ethnic cast, and it does numbers, huge numbers worldwide. Why can't you, what's your excuse, Hollywood, for not having more diversity in your films? And you can't say that these movies don't sell internationally, because they do. And it's been proven time and time again, where it's not just black people going to see Will Smith. It's not just black people going to see Kevin Hart. Like, these guys, you know, and Denzel and so on and so forth. So if you say there's no Asian stars, you know, like, well, Scarlett Johansson in this Ghost in the Shell movie, like, you make an Asian star she wasn't always bankable. You made her bankable because you put her in these movies. You can get an Asian guy. You can put Constance Wu in one of these fucking movies. That's just the first Asian name that came to my head. But, you know, you can, and Tilda Swinton. Tilda Swinton is an amazing actress. She's not selling out a theater. She's not selling out. She's not opening big time on these movies. She's a brilliant actor, but she's not gonna, you know, it's a lot of bullshit. And then it just leads me to believe that it's racist. You know, that's what it is, man. I'm trying to find this. Let's see. Cause it is on April 27th. Yeah, Vulture's Kyle Buchanan on the trend of casting actors such as Idris Elba and Lupita Nyong'o in roles where you don't see their faces. Like, these good-looking people, you can't see their fucking faces. So it's the check out The Frame podcast, and you'll see the April 27th edition. And it's there, man. It's just stay, you know, I'm glad that more people are woke. You know, that's a good thing. But this shit ain't nothing new. Just, you know, that's all I want to say about it. It ain't nothing new. So I would say Miles Ahead, see it. Green Room, definitely see it. Echo Park, it's on Netflix. I can give you some dates. I don't know. Why don't I give you some dates and I'll get the hell out of here. May 13th, I'm back in the upstate New York. The Comedy Works in Saratoga Springs, New York at 8 o'clock p.m. May 14th, I'm at the Social House in Rotterdam/Schenectady at 8 o'clock and 10 p.m. May 26th, I'll be at Paisano's in Rutherford, New Jersey at 8 o'clock p.m. Gotham Comedy Club, June 4th at 11 p.m. And June 18th, I'm at 10th Street Live in Kenilworth, New Jersey at 9 o'clock p.m. Check out some more dates on chrislambert.com. That's it for this week, and I'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.